Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of J-Talk Extra Time. It's the first period for this week. I'm John Steele, and I'm joined again by Stuart Smith. Hi, Stu. How are you doing?
Good. We've reached the end. Reached the end, John.
Yeah. You mean of the J3 season, don't you, Stu? Not of our podcasting.
Absolutely.
That's pleasing. I thought you were dropping a bombshell earlier. Okay, we better get into it. Stu, it was dramatic. It was, it was squeaky bum time. It was crazy. And that was just my trip to IKEA on Sunday afternoon. But I think most people were focused on the J3 finale, weren't they? Round 34 took place on Sunday afternoon. And dramatic finish. Sagamihara leapfrogging Nagano to finish second and join Akita in being promoted to J2 for next season. So, amazing stuff, really. Nagano started the day in second place. They only needed to match Sagamihara's result to clinch promotion themselves, but Nagano ended up losing 2-0 at home to Iwata, while Sagamihara won 2-1 away at Imabari, a game that I think we both thought would be quite a tricky one for them. So, Stu, we'll review the games clockwatch style as best we can. This might not be the ideal format because the lead, the second place didn't really change hands that much during the afternoon, but away we go anyway. Sagamihara got down to business early away at Imabari with Brazilian forward Romulo firing them ahead with a very nice volley. That was in just the 16th minute. So that meant Sagamihara went second in the live table, and Nagano were under pressure to score in their game against Iwate. At Imabari, there was a brilliant save from Sagamihara's goalkeeper, Victor, when he was prone on the ground to preserve their 1-0 lead. And Sagamihara then went 2-0 up just after half-time. Takahira Umabachi with a very nice drive from outside the box after Ryuji Saito's backheel set him up. Now, up in Nagano, things started to go really wrong for them after a goalless first half. About 8 minutes into the second period, some very untidy defending, and a bit of a mess, really, between the Nagano goalkeeper, Kotaro Tachikawa, and a defender, Takuma Mizutani, allowed another Brazilian, this time it was Morelato, to steal in and put Iwate 1-0 up. We'll switch back to Imabari briefly, Stu. Hope you're following along.
I'm just about.
Yeah. Imabari pulled a goal back, thanks to a thumping header from a corner from Jung Hang Chol. That was in the 64th minute. But Sagamihara was still 2-1 up and still going strong as things stood. If we switch back to Nagano, Mizutani, who was pretty much at fault for the Iwate goal, almost redeemed himself with a curling shot that was well saved by Kohei Doi in the Iwate goal. But then there was a hammer blow for Nagano with just 5 minutes left. Doi's opposite number, Tachikawa, kind of was put under pressure with a bad back pass, really, but his poor clearance led to a chance for Brenner. Tachikawa did well to block it, but then seemed to lose his bearings or lose the ball, certainly. And yes, the Iwate substitute to Shota Yomesaka was on hand to sweep in the rebound. He'd only just come on the pitch as a substitute, and it was 2-0 for Iwate. And that's how it finished. Nagano lost 2-0 and finished third. And as mentioned, they were overtaken by Sagamihara, who won 2-1. Pretty amazing end to the season, really, Stuart. We were talking a little bit before we started recording. I don't think it really occurred to either of us that Nagano wouldn't go out and get the job done. And Sagamihara's away game at Imabari didn't turn out to be as difficult for them as we perhaps expected. I know you were not at IKEA on Sunday. What did you make of this this J3 finale?
Before the game started, I wasn't expecting so much drama. I didn't think that Nagano would have too many problems seeing off Morioka, but we spoke a little bit before this that there's actually a few layers to this particular kind of promotion battle, and one of the kind of strongest layers is Morioka came out and they really played what they really put themselves about. They were under pressure for the first half. I think Nagano had quite a few chances in the first half. I think they had a couple cleared off the line, but Morioka gave as good as they got. And one of the reasons that has that happened, I think, is because Morioka's manager, Yutaka Akita, his last game in charge when he was at Machida was a defeat against Nagano. And that had serious implications for his professional career. It had serious implications for Machida as well. And it turns out that he has rather a long memory and sent his team out to do no good to Nagano on this day. And after it was goalless at half time and they got the news that Sagamihara were winning 2-0 in Imabari, it's one of those where Nagano looked like they were giving it everything, but it's kind of like running the wrong way up an escalator. I mean, they were trying, but they were getting nowhere. And, you know, Sagamihara did what they had to do. I mean, Romulo's volley was outstanding. And, you know, Victor came up trumps when he was on the ground when he made that excellent save in the first half.
Yeah, I don't know how he did it.
I mean, anywhere else on target and that's the goal and it's 1-1 and it's a different afternoon. But, you know, Nagano had it, but they for whatever reason, either they didn't have the mental strength or they didn't have the capacity to deal with it. Well, the one thing that we've been consistent about Sagamihara, well, there are two things. We didn't think they would get promoted. I think we've been very consistent mm-hmm. about that. But we've also mm-hmm. said that they're mentally strong. They're mentally and physically strong. They've got an imposing spine of the team, and they've got experience. I mean, they've got Tomizawa Seitaro, their captain, has been through it all, and he's got all the experience that he's accrued during the years. Think the spine of that team, you know, you got Milton, he's Man Mountain at the back. I don't know where they got him from. He reminds me of I've just forgotten. Who's the Greek fella who played for Arsenal? Socrates? Yeah, it reminds me of him, just a complete unit at the back. They obviously had Romulo up front, who had a really, really good season. Victor at the back, back up to J2 at the first attempt. Sagamihara did what they had to do, and the league table doesn't lie, and they deserve to go into J2 for the first time. This defeat will live long in the memory in Nagano. I mean, at the final whistle, it was almost eerie because Nagano's game finished before Sagamihara's. And as soon as the final whistle went, the drums stopped. And it was such an eerie kind of feeling that they knew they weren't going up, but they didn't have it confirmed. And it was a horrible thing. As a neutral supporter, it's a horrible thing to see and hear. But then of course they had to have their end of year ceremony after the final game as well. So that was I think that was half an hour that most people would want back.
Well, as we know, the J League, for all its sort of week to week chaos, especially this season, these kind of end of season ceremonies and photo opportunities are very carefully planned and choreographed. And so all the Nagano players would have known the schedule if they'd done it.
Yep.
Right. They would have had like we're going to get the t-shirts are going to come on from here. You know, you're going to have a photo taken here. And I think that's the kind of thing that goes through their mind. And to be honest, from a sports psychology point of view, they probably don't spend as long talking about what they're going to do if it all goes tits up.
Yeah.
As it did. I can imagine that being pretty horrible. I mean, I've been at games, back home where the expected things not happened. And yep. It's in the nicest possible way, it's kind of awkward, isn't it?
It is. That's what it looked like. I mean, when the referee blew the final whistle, it took a couple of seconds, but it just went silent, and it was really, really, I keep using the word. It was eerie. It just the sound just stopped, and you know, even in J3, there's only one commentator in for the DAZN J-League commentary teams, and they are more often than not, I think most of them are, they live local to the area, and they are kind of not associated with the club, but they are kind of vested interested in the club, and the Nagano commentator just like you could hear it in his voice. He was just like, this is horrendous, just get me out of here. When the end of year ceremony finished, he just said, see you next year, sayonara. Like just finished on that. And I think Nagano expected to go up. I think that's what I took from the post-match things.
Well, I suppose we can say as well, I mean, we mentioned sort of historical context a little bit already, but I mean, I can remember, would it have been back in the JFL days when Nagano won the league but couldn't come up because of the stadium issue?
Yes.
So they've had the case where they've won. Obviously, that wasn't, I don't think that was J3. I think that was before J3.
Yeah, I think it was. Was a thing. I think so. Yeah.
You know, but they've won their title, but they're not being able. So, you know, they've been in a sporting sense, they've won the right to come up to the J League initially, and then they weren't allowed.
Mm.
And then now they've got the stadium in place, they have the infrastructure, and then they've had a couple of really poor seasons. So I think they must have thought their time had come, and it wasn't the case.
Well, I mean,
back.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, it'll be quite. I'm not sure they'll quite get a better chance. I mean, I might be wrong. I might be proved completely wrong next year. They might kind of just tear through the league. But to go into the final game at home, knowing you have to win against the mid-table side and losing 2-0 is kind of difficult to come back. And there's, I think, one of the interesting things is it's slightly away from the men's team, but Nagano have started a women's team in the newly formed, what is it, the Wii League, the Women Empowerment League, I think that's what it is. And their president, Parcero Football Club president today, said that whatever happened this year, promotion or non-promotion, it was going to be financially tight next year, but with the fact that they didn't get promoted, it's going to be exceptionally tight on a financial footing for Nagano this year and this coming year, 2021. That's another thing that they have to get added into their kind of calculations for next season. And you know, it's just
tell me about the goalkeepers, because we were talking about goalkeepers a little bit before as well.
Yeah, the goalkeeper triangle. So for those who don't know, there's a bit of a goalkeeper kind of music, like John said, musical chairs happened this past off season. So Yudai Tanaka used to play for Sagamihara. He went to Akita, promptly became the best goalkeeper in the league. Akita's first choice goalkeeper, Takuya Matsumoto, went from Akita to Gifu. And Gifu's previous first-choice goalkeeper, Victor, went to Sagamihara to replace Yudai Tanaka. Now, Yudai Tanaka and Victor are promoted to J2, while Takuya Matsumoto was benched halfway through the season after he conceded 5 goals against his former club. So, in that particular game of musical chairs, there's only one loser, and it's Gifu. And I'm sure we'll come on to Gifu being losers later on in the podcast. But
seamless.
Yeah, there you go. And but yeah, the goalkeeper moves kind of worked for Akita and worked for Sagamihara, but they it blew up in Gifu's face quite spectacularly. So the goalkeepers, right?
Well, I think we should say, I'm not sure I mentioned it, the top, and it's probably just like the fact that it's made us both look a bit silly, but congratulations to Sagamihara. I don't
think
most
definitely, yeah.
Anybody had them in a sort of pre-season table finishing in the top six, maybe, or in you know, top five. So to see them second and coming up to J2 next year is very exciting.
We should say that they are a club that have a decent looking forward path. They're in negotiations with their local authority for a football. Not football specific, but like a brand new stadium in Sagamihara itself. Mm. They're part of a group of sports teams in Sagamihara that are angling for a new kind of sports park to be built. There's the city of Sagamihara itself is I think it's the second destination outside Tokyo to be earmarked for a linear Shinkansen stop, a linear bullet train, the one that can go like 500 kilometers an hour or something like that. So Sagamihara itself, I think it's quite forward thinking, and I think they're being quite bullish on their city's future. It wouldn't surprise me if in the near future they were given planning permission to kind of convert some land near Sagamihara Station into a sports park. And so
I was just thinking that linear bullet train sounds like a pretty good description of their tactics.
There you go. Talk about seamless. Yeah, we'll give some of that. I think, Sagamihara probably have a decent looking future, although I think it'll be a really difficult future in J2 next year. But medium to long term, I think it's not a bad place to be.
I feel the same. I think Sagamihara, I always felt, for the reasons you've outlined, they had the potential or even a good probability of coming up to J2 at some point.
Mm.
But I thought that might be a 5 or even 10 year, project. I didn't think I'd see it happening in 2020. It's just one of the many surprises that 2020 is in store on and off. I think we can do a deep dive on Sagamihara in a sort of season review pod in the near future. I think the thing I'd mention before we move on is probably that their recruitment was a little bit left field and quite interesting, as it has been in previous years. Things like, for example, do you remember early on they let, is it João Gabriel, the Brazilian target man?
Yeah, leave? He went to Kagoshima, right?
Yeah, and they replaced him ostensibly with Romulo, who had a similar hairstyle but was a very different kind of player.
Yes.
And at the time, we were, or I was certainly scratching my head thinking, this looks like a kind of like-for-like trade.
Mm.
But I think they obviously got a better player with Romulo. But they also signed, for example, the young... Is it Matsuda or Matsuda? I think it's Matsuda from Yokohama Marinos who tore it up for them.
He did, yes. Matsuda,
First 3 or 4 months of the season, and then he was doing so well that he ended up getting recalled.
Yeah.
Back to the Marinos. But then they also had Jungo Fujimoto, who came in on a full transfer from Gamba or Shimizu? Gamba Osaka?
Where did he come from? One of those teams, but like just, I think like that
interesting signings that were used, they were used in the right way to benefit the team.
Well, I think that that kind of ties into what we were saying earlier about the mental strength of the team, because like players like Fujimoto, I mean Inamoto is there. He's been on the periphery all season, but he's
sort of
there.
Tomizawa as well.
Kiyohara as well. Like, they've got all these experienced players who have played in big games. They've played in bigger games than Imabari away. And, you know, they can just kind of turn to each other or turn to the other players and say, all right, lads, just keep it calm. We've got this. Whereas Nagano, they do have experienced players of their own, but they don't have players... Or they didn't seem to have players that would kind of stand up on Sunday and say, look, just keep it calm. Keep it calm. We got this. Like, I think it's true that
Nagano didn't know what to do once they went behind, right? Against Iwate.
It looked that. Yeah.
It's true. Mm. Yeah, well, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens next year. I mean, I don't think we should talk about next season too much yet because it might trigger a nervous breakdown for me and for some listeners. But congratulations to Sagi Mihara. I don't think anybody could say it's not deserved after the season they've had. I think they ended up, was it 19 games, 20 games unbeaten?
Something like that, yeah.
Almost Akita-like levels of unbeatenness. And commiserations to Nagano. I think they... I was sure they were going to do it, and I'm sure if I was feeling that way, a lot of their players and fans must be very down and right, feeling the same. But they'll sort of regroup and have to do it all again next season. We should talk about some other games, Stu, because otherwise we could drone on about Sagi Mihara and Nagano all night, I'm sure. We've got to talk about Gifu. Let's get it out of the way. They finished sixth in the end, didn't they? After losing 2-1 away at Gamba Osaka's under-23s, the Gambinos' last J3 game, because the under-23 teams won't be featuring in the third tier next year. Daisuke Takagi put Gamba's under-23s ahead before Kensei Nakashima equalised, but 5 minutes before half-time, so all the goals in the first half here, Shuhei Kawasaki tapped in the winner under not much pressure inside the penalty area. I'll come to you on Gifu for a sort of a final comment in a moment, Stu. Other games, Kagoshima seemed to have a bit of a point to prove in their home game against the champions Akita, didn't they? They thumped them 3-0. And if you look at the final table, the thing that I noticed, Kagoshima reeled off a winning run, haven't they, to end the season. They ended up finishing fourth, but they were only 3 points off the second place spot. You know, another win and a draw somewhere along the line, and we would have been talking about Kagoshima going back up. So that's pretty crazy to think about. The game between Tottori and Kumamoto had its kickoff delayed by about 2 hours due to heavy snow. But this was a game where there was nothing riding on it in terms of promotion, so I don't think the league didn't mind having the kickoff move back. And there's a brilliant sort of 60-second video of the pitch being cleared in like a time lapse on the J League's official Twitter accounts. Worth checking out. It's my favourite content, non-match content of the week so far. So the game was delayed when it did get started. It was all about the retiring J League legend Fernandinho. His corner was headed in by Rikito Inoue for Tottori's opener just before half time, and the 39-year-old Brazilian scored the second goal himself 11 minutes into the second half. He has that way of making the game sort of stand still, doesn't he, before he shoots. Time just stands still and then he scores. And so I think that was his last professional goal. He enjoyed that one. And the snow started to fall, or was continuing to fall, when Hayato Asakawa pulled the goal back for Kumamoto. Is it really a Kumamoto game if you don't see Hayato Asakawa pulling a goal back when they're 2-0 down, Stu? It's not the millionth time this season we've seen that. It finished 2-1. So Tottori signing off with a win, and Fernandinho signing off with it with an assist and a goal. So well done to him. We've enjoyed watching him down the years, as I'm sure the listeners have too. Stu, Gifu losing away at Gamba, Kagoshima thumping Akita, and Tottori beating Kumamoto. Did you notice anything when you caught up with these games?
Did I notice anything?
Anything good?
The first thing I noticed is that Gamba's under-23 somehow managed to fill their bench this week with 7 substitutes, whereas last week they only had 3, and two of them were goalkeepers.
You're not calling foul play.
I'm not calling foul play, and I'm definitely not bitter. He says, but I just think that I think that's kind of a microcosm of why I don't like the under-23 system, and it's not certainly not because Gifu lost against Gamba and Cerezo under-23 this year. Gamba had they had Shoji Toyama, they had Kawasaki, they had some other players that had played the previous day for the first team. I mean, we'd all like to have kind of a squad of like 50 players to call on when the season's at the end and players are tired. But anyway, I digress. I should say, before people start complaining, Gamba were fully deserving of their win. They played some beautiful stuff. They, as much as I malign them, they played some great stuff. I think what I would say is that I wonder if those players like Toyama, like Kawasaki, maybe Yamaguchi at the back, Jiro Nakamura, some of these players. I wonder if they go out to, I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this, real teams, for the want of a better phrase. I wonder if they'd improve more. So, you know, like Kashima send out all their players to J2. You just said about Matsuda, the fullback from Yokohama F. Marinos, they sent him out to Sagamihara. Marinos also sent Obi Powell, the goalkeeper, to Tochigi. I wonder if next year you might find that Gamba send out a lot of these promising youngsters to get real life experience as well. And I wonder if that will actually end up being better for the players in the long run. That'll be an interesting thing to see. I think Saris will have that issue as well. But yeah, Gamba, Osaka were well worthy of their win. They played some great stuff yesterday. Kagoshima, I think what I would say about Kagoshima, it's easy to play well when the pressure's off. They did reel off a run of victories, but they were never seriously in the promotion hunt. And I think that maybe they caught a few teams coming winding down. I know they thumped Kumamoto. They obviously, Akita have got their eyes on the Emperor's Cup quarter-ish finals this midweek. So I think they were going big guns for that. Scotty McIntyre and Alex Bishop were down there at the weekend. I think getting the VIP treatment down there, which is pretty good for them. What was the other game? Speaking of end of year ceremonies, I mean, Fernandinho's retirement ceremony, it went on to like 6 o'clock and it was absolutely freezing in Toto. It was snowing, it was sleet, and all the players were outside, and you know, they were lined up to show their appreciation because Fernandinho is a legend of the J League. That mm-hmm. word is bandied about quite a lot these days, but Fernandinho is, and according to my friend Gifu Ritchie, he's going back to Brazil to work with underprivileged kids. Is what Richie said, and Richie never lies. He always tells the truth. I think Fernandinho doing that, and just having and just being just a generally looks like a nice person, really. Good on him. What a way to go out. He scored what turned out to be the winning goal in his final league game, a game that was delayed for 2 hours while supporters cleaned the pitch. Right. I don't know if that came across. So. Yeah, I don't know if that came across on the timeline thing.
Yeah, I think I mentioned. Yeah, that's right. Volunteers. Yeah.
Yeah, from both teams as well, because Kumamoto fans cleared the pitch as well, and I think it's a fitting way to go out for Fernandinho. So good. Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, I think we need more good news stories as we round off what's been a pretty rough year, you know, away from football and even in football at times. So yeah, seeing people, I mean, the J League would have had a problem if this game had to be postponed, right? Because yes. they sort of in the nicest possible way, the J League's official kind of end of season awards ceremony is tomorrow,
yeah.
Tuesday. December 22nd, so they didn't really want any games outstanding before holding that for, I don't think it would be too strong to say it's legal reasons, but just like common sense.
Yes.
So I think they pulled out all the stops to get this game played, and I really do think when we come to end of season review pods and awards, I think we do have to probably look this year more than any other beyond the actual players to the people who've got the season.
Most definitely.
And I include obviously the chairman, you know, Mr. Mirai, the J League chairman in that, but people at the absolute like could not be closer to the grassroots, literally.
Yep.
They're there with a shovel at like, I mean, if you watch the time lapse of them clearing the pitch, it's overnight. And then there's like there's even like a twist in the 57 second video where they clear the pitch completely. Then it goes, there's another light dusting of snow that they have to clear again. And you're like, at what point? I mean, I don't know at what point you'd be like, you'd give up and go home, but I would have been back in bed within about 15 minutes. You know, I would have tweaked my back and been like, sorry, it's not happening. So yeah, you got to hold your hands up. I think there's a lot of people who've really worked overtime just to get us season. We got to applaud that. And yeah, Fernandinho, I think, I mean, I've watched the retirement ceremony for another legend tonight, Kengo Nakamura, and I think players are just trying to outdo each other how long these things can go. Kengo Nakamura's ceremony was shown live on DAZN, and I think after about 2.5 hours, I gave up. he's a legend, but even I have my
your limits. There were things that needed
doing at home. So, but yeah, 2 hours in the snow is a long time. So yeah, fair play to him, and I hope he goes back and does a thing that he obviously feels very, you know, is very important to him in Brazil, and good luck to him. Other games, Stu, we should wrap up in the interests of completeness, I suppose. There was a very exciting end of season game in Shizuoka. Numazu eventually beat Toyama 3-2 thanks to a 93rd minute winner from Takuya Sugai. Now, Toyama thought they grabbed a point in this game. They equalised and made it 2-2 in the 89th minute. But in the last seconds, a pretty ludicrous goal to win it for Numazu. They managed to hit the post, and then from the rebound, a different player slammed the ball against the other post. And then from the second rebound, is this right? And then Sugai slammed
yes,
in the
that's
winner.
Right.
So
yeah.
Yeah, if you've ever played pinball,
it looks
that's
exactly
kind of what
like
it was
that.
Like. Yeah, crazy. YSCC ended 2020 with a sort of double, double lottery win. Really, they won a match and they got a clean sheet. They beat Fujieda 1-0 at home, and their captain Koichi Miao scored his fifth goal of the season to win it for YSCC. Seretse Osaka's under-23s also ended their lifespan in J3 with a 4-1 home defeat against Hachinohe. That's a result that means that Seretse Osaka's youngsters finished bottom of the table this year. Two of Hachinohe's goals came in second-half stoppage time, though, adding some gloss to the scoreline. I noticed that Tsubasa Ando, a player that's caught my eye many times this year, scored a nice goal. That was Hachinohe's third. And there was even some cheer for Sanuki, Stu. They've had a pretty miserable season, but they ended it with a 3-2 home win over Fukushima, meaning that they finish, Sanuki, that is, finish in 16th place, third from the bottom. The pick of the goals, though, was probably Fukushima's second one, a great free kick from Hiromu Kamada, which I think was his first J-League goal. I think there'll be many more, judging by the quality of the technique on that free kick. So four games where there wasn't really a lot riding on them, Stu, but nevertheless, the goals flowed freely. Is there anything you wanted to mention or anything that you saw when you were catching up with these games?
Yeah, I want to mention, I don't know if this has ever happened before, but at the end of the Numazu game, Numazu forward Kazuki Somea was given, after the final whistle, he was given a second yellow card for kicking the ball away, which meant he was sent off after the season had finished. I don't even know if that's ever happened before, because what happened was Toyama had thrown everyone up for a corner, and including the goalkeeper. So when the ball was cleared, it fell to Somea, who had a clear run at goal, but the referee blew the final whistle. But Somea just blasted the ball away anyway, and the referee.
What crime? What rule is he broken?
Kicking the ball away. Then? Kicking the ball away. I don't know if that
the game is finished.
Yeah, but you can still get booked for kicking the ball away, right? But yeah, but it was Somea's second yellow, and so he got sent off after the season had finished. So statisticians out there, if that's ever happened, I mean.
I've read of players have been given a red card before a game before, I'm sure, before game started.
Yeah.
And I did see, I'm sure this has been mentioned on the pod before, but I love the story. So briefly, Kensuke Sato at Yokohama FC, he was once shown two red cards after the game.
Because
he was given his second yellow after the final whistle, which made it a red. And then he was actually given another red because he didn't get the hint.
Yeah.
So does that be after?
Yeah. Well, players get sent. Yeah, players get sent off after the game quite often. I know Freer got sent off after the game. The Nagasaki centre back got sent off after the game in Tochigi.
Yes,
after the season, I mean, that's taking it to a whole different level. I mean,
do you think the referee could have just looked the other way on that one and just been like, "Hey, you know, it's Christmas. You know, everybody's tired."
We've all
don't need to apply the letter of the law quite so strictly. I feel this way about booking players for taking their shirt off when they score a goal. And I know it's a proper rule, and if the referees don't do it, then they'll be marked down by their assessor, I suppose. But I thought the idea was that it was to stop players from having slogans on their shirts that and their undershirt rather that might be inflammatory or something. So if the player, we're off topic, Stu, we'll rectify this shortly. But if a player takes the shirt off and they haven't got any slogan on there, then what do they still have to have the booking? It seems a bit, down with this sort of thing.
Down with this sort of thing. Be careful now. But I think the referee could have led the other way, seeing as it was the end of the season. But dunno, you gotta get those marks from the assessors, right? I think the only other thing I'd point out is that Kenta Shimizu, the Sanaki goalkeeper, his career came to an end after over 500 appearances over who did he play for? Sanaki, Yamagata, did he play for Kashiwa? Jeff? I can't remember which one. I think one of those teams. But yeah, to play 500 professional games is a magnificent achievement, and I think
keeping goal for Sanaki this season would finish anybody off, really, wouldn't
well,
they?
Well, he's been first choice goalkeeper there for the last 3 years, so I mean he's a glutton for punishment, but he signed off with a win, so that's a pretty rare event for Sanaki these days. Great career. I think they had another player retiring, Ryota Nagata as well, the midfielder. He retired as well. They both signed off with a win. Good for them. And just a little slither. Did I say sliver? Slither? Sliver of, sorry, it's late. A sliver of good news for Sanaki this year.
All good stuff. And I think... I think we just got to congratulate all the teams, really. Not that this is going to sound like, you get a prize, but just getting the season finished this year.
I think getting
through the 34 matches is, I know some teams have had pretty terrible seasons that they will want to sort of, close the book on and forget about pretty quickly. But I if you cast your mind back to some of our kind of, pods in May and June, where we were discussing what was actually going to happen, I thought we were heading towards a J3 season being cancelled completely, or just having a few some regional tournament things, or something. To have got to look at a league table for J3 in 2020 and see that they've all played, 18 teams have all managed the 34 fixtures is pretty incredible. Might be too strong a word, but it's certainly impressive. And well done to all involved.
Yeah, definitely. I think the fact that spectators have been gradually allowed back in is another feather in the J League's cap. And I think we're quite right to focus on the people who've actually made it happen. And it's not sexy to say thank you to Chairman Murai Mitsuru. It's not the usual thing to say well done to the club executives and club owners and that kind of stuff. But I think for the most part they've all kind of accepted the cards they were dealt this year, and they all kind of went forward with the policy that we're going to get this done. How do we get it done? Not can
yeah,
we get
I
it
didn't
done.
See,
like, it's
yeah.
how can
oh,
we...
Sorry, well, go ahead, Stu, sorry, go ahead.
Look at you just interrupting me mid-flow. Christ. I think they went forward with the thinking, look, we've got to do this. And, you can... A lot of it is motivated by money, of course it is. But I think also at the same time, like, the volunteers on the ground, like you mentioned with the Tottori Kumamoto games, but it's also the volunteers at the stadium who kind of risk their health to accept tickets or to serve drinks or to show people the way or to kind of tape put tape onto seats to make sure people are socially distanced and that kind of stuff. It's a testament to everyone who's worked hard and who's sacrificed their time and put the effort into in order to get this season completed. Because I'm the same as you. There were times when I thought it wouldn't happen, and it has happened. And so there should be a round of applause to everyone who helped make it happen, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the point it was sort of interrupting you rudely to make, and I apologise, was, there hasn't been anywhere near as much moaning as there could have been in terms of scheduling, you know, the teams having to play, you know, three games in a week more often than not, or having like, a weekday afternoon game, for example, on, you know, Wednesday 1 p.m. on a regular weekday. And, I think if I were a club owner, which, you know, thankfully for everybody I'm not, but given the logistics of getting this season on, there must have been a few meetings where people were on the verge of saying, this is just not possible. It's not possible to check the temperature of everybody who comes into the stadium. It's not possible to make sure they can sit, 2 meters apart from everybody else. And I think they've just had to ask for a lot of cooperation from fans as well. And I think, you know, even the fans have basically, had to deal with that. Like, I don't know if you had to do it when you went to some games at Gifu, but I think when I've gone to YSCC, you know, I had to take, you know, have to take a screenshot of the QR code and write down where you were sitting and put your address in and stuff.
Yep.
On the one hand, it's intrusive. On the other, it's a small, you know, we have to cooperate in order to make it as safe as possible for everybody. And I think, by and large, people got that and they understood that, and that's how we were able to get to we've only finished the season 3 weeks later than we ordinarily would have done, and to get all the games played with only a 3 week deadline, considering there were no games at all for 3 months, is pretty awesome. Now everybody needs to probably lie down in a darkened room for a week or two.
Yes.
We don't have a bit of sort of big slate of fixtures to plough through for the coming week or weekend, because that's the end of the J3 season. But we should mention, I think you alluded to already, Akita, by virtue of being the J3 champions, they are into the Emperor's Cup quarter final. We'll call it that, because that's what the JFA is calling it. This Wednesday, December the 23rd, Akita will take on, somewhat surprisingly, I suppose, Fukuyama City. That's right, isn't it? Now, the game's going to be played at Yurtech Stadium in Sendai, which is, my geography is almost as bad as my maths, Stu, but it's pretty close to Akita, isn't it? It's not far, okay.
it's much nearer Akita than it is Fukuyama. Fukuyama is in between Hiroshima and Okayama in western Japan.
Okay, so they're getting the shitty end of the sandwich with that one. So Akita will be, if they win this game on Wednesday, then they'll be travelling to Todoroki Stadium to face Kawasaki on Sunday, and that will be in the semi-final. So interesting times. I hope Akita defend a bit better than they did against Kagoshima at the weekend, otherwise Fukuyama could give them a scare. But we'll wait and see what happens. We wish them all the best, I suppose.
Yeah, I think I think they will defend a bit better than they did against Kagoshima. It's interesting. I mean, an Emperor's Cup quarterfinal between Akita and Fukuyama. I mean, if you'd have said that before the season, people probably said you were mental for even suggesting that. But I mean, they're only what? I mean, they get through this game, and then they get the easy task of seeing off one of the greatest J League teams in history. They're only two games away from the final, and I think both the quarterfinals. That's a weird thing to say, from an English point of view. Both the quarterfinals, but I think they'll both be good, because I think Honda against Tokushima is going to be a bit of a. A bit of a barnstormer as well. But yeah, good luck to Akita. Hope they can hold the J3 end of things up.
Well, I will say, whoever does take on Kawasaki at Todoroki on Sunday, they will have two possible advantages. Kengo Nakamura's retirement ceremony has probably ploughed up a good third of the pitch. I think the entire sort of right wing this evening, and also the pretty much the entire squad and staff had to stand there freezing their bollocks off on a stage in the middle of the pitch for about 3 hours. So, you know, if you are going to play against the sort of the probably the best, I think if we're being realistic, probably the best team the J League's ever produced, the Kawasaki team that we've got now, maybe playing them when some of them have got sniffles.
Yeah.
You know, might be the best time. I don't know. But yeah, we'll wait and see. Hopefully, Stu, we're going to get back together to talk J2 sometime this week. I imagine that'll be after this the Wednesday Emperor's Cup game, so we can perhaps review them in brief at that juncture, and then maybe talk a bit more about the Emperor's Cup games that are coming up as well. But I think we should leave it here for J3. Yeah, thanks as always, everybody, for listening and coming with us on the journey. Thankfully, not a musical one. You know, you wouldn't want that with Stu and I in charge, probably. But yeah, it's been a trip, and yeah, congratulations to Sagamihara again, who've done it against all odds, or surprisingly, and Akita, we've known for some time, they'll be in J2 next year. It's going to be very interesting. But yeah, thanks as always for listening, downloading, and supporting us. You know, by doing that, or even on the Patreon, if you support us there, we appreciate it. And yeah, enjoy the midweek Emperor's Cup football, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.